Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favorite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello, how you doing? I hope you're well. As I always say, here we are, we're calling another edition. The world is still weird, isn't it? It's still happening out there. I don't know what's going on. But while I've got your ears, before we get into this week's episode, what I'd like you to do is have a listen for a minute to subscribers. I've learned this week. Subscribers is where it's all, that's what it's all about, the subscribers. And all I need you to do is click on the subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcast. And then that's it. It doesn't cost you anything. It's not like a U2 album that will just appear on your phone and you can't get rid of. It's literally just, you just press the button, subscribe. And then that way, advertisers will say, oh, they've got that amount of subscribers. Let's get behind this podcast. I know it's a thing. I don't really like to ask about these things, but if you could do that for me and spread the word and tell the people, that would be fantastic. So here we are again, another edition. This week, I'm joined by my mate, actually. A mate. He's called Garrett Millerick. He's a fellow comedian and a very good friend of mine. And we'd been talking about him coming onto the podcast for a long time, but he was a little bit cagey. He was a little bit like, well, I don't really know. And but really, it was eating him alive that he wasn't on. So we got him on, and it was a blast. We really covered a lot of ground with this one, and I really got to know him a bit more than I thought I would. He's a really lovely lad anyway, and we really got into it. At the beginning of this, it's because we're mates. There'll be a bit of that. There's a bit of us two just taking the piss out of each other, as men are, as men do. You know what men are like. So there's a bit of that. So I do call him a fat piece of shit early on, but you'll see why as we get into the episode. There's also Jade Adams again makes an appearance frying some chicken. Jade just likes to, whenever I start recording, she likes to just like get on with things. So she'll fry chicken, or she'll angle grind a car in half, or she'll start a
cement mixer. She doesn't keep quiet in this one as well. It's worth mentioning. She does chip in quite a bit.
Oh, does she chip in as well?
Yeah,
she does chip in, actually. She likes to chip in. That's the thing, because even though she's like, oh, I just like it that you're doing your thing, she likes to get in on it as well. She knows this is cool. And also, this was recorded back in July. So, things were still a bit different back then. We were still the lockdown thing was still around, and we were doing that. Well, we were coming out of it back then.
It was lockdown part one back then, wasn't it?
It was lockdown part one, wasn't it? And now it looks like we're probably going back to it. Do you know what? I can't keep up. It's like, I don't know. I've got gigs coming up, and now they're saying, yeah, you can do them, but you can't hang around in groups more than six. And do you know what? Just do what you can. Wear your masks. Don't lick each other. Keep in your pods, and don't. All right. I don't really know. There's no advice here. I'm just as lost as you lot are. But this is a great episode. I really wanted Garrett to come on for a long time. There's some really great stuff. We had a really good chat. He's a really nice guy. So let's stop me waffling as I always do and get him on. Garrett Millerick coming up in just a sec.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It was a nice background noise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Chicken frying.
How long was it in the oven for?
Oh, well, don't know. Maybe just run it. We'll run a tap.
Yeah, well, I mean, it can't be long.
For an hour.
20 minutes, that's going to come out, isn't it? And then we're going to hear all about...
Yeah, give me all the crashing and the banging and the pots and the pans.
Swearing.
Yeah. Oh, the alarm will definitely go off as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because the oven needs a clean. So that'll happen. Anyway, are we good?
Beautiful. I'm recording on everything, so...
No, I've just pressed the wrong button on my... Wait. Don't do that.
God's sake, Rich.
Because it popped up. Do you want to upgrade, update? And I went, oh, no, later. And I pressed, and it nearly did it. No, now, you helmet. Here we are. Right, we're going. This is
great.
It. Here we are. And you'll be pleased to know I haven't found my Fitbit yet. It's coming your way, you fat piece of shit.
Well, you got to save that for the chat. I'll reveal to your listeners the abuse that you put me through.
We're definitely recording.
This is it, mate.
We're doing the podcast. The chicken's finished cooking. We're actually
We pride ourselves on our sloppy intros.
We just kind of slime into it. We don't really. Yeah, there's no big intro. We just get on with it. So this is going to open with me calling you a fat piece of shit, and someone messaged
on brand.
It was your idea.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. So you love it. I think you're a bit of a masochist, and you like a fat Cockney dude shouting horrible things at you.
It's the only thing that's going to motivate me, Rich. I mean, I haven't spoken to you in a couple of weeks. I got gout.
Mate, I've heard about people putting on some timber, but they haven't actually really wounded themselves, mate.
Yeah. I got the disease of a 17th century sovereign.
How is your scurvy?
Yeah, it's absolutely superb. But I thought I was being very clever because I was like, well, I wasn't drinking wine or spirits or anything. Because everybody was doing their lockdown day drinking, and I was like, I'll just drink lager, because, you know, lager's got an inbuilt defence mechanism. Like, you know when you've had 12 pints of lager, you're full. So I was just, eating meat, not moving, and drinking lager. And then I latterly started doing some DIY, and I thought I'd dropped something. I woke up the next day, my foot was throbbing, and I was like, oh, I must have dropped a hammer on my foot. And after three days, Sarah was like, go to the hospital, because I couldn't walk. So I had to go to the hospital, and they were like, yes, you have developed gout.
Oh, my God. Did they prescribe you some leeches?
No. What they said, they were like, okay, well, you can... either we can get you on this medication, which you have to go on for like the rest of your life. And they're like, do you want to Google the name of the medication? And I did, and they look at the side effects. You're like, nah, it doesn't sound good. And I was like, what's the other option? They were like, you could stop drinking that much lager in the middle of the day and go vegetarian for a bit. And I was like, I will have option B, please.
Oh, mate. But, you know, I love a bit of day drinking, but not every day. That's even I stopped Even I stopped doing that. I just got bored. So I wasn't getting pissed. I like to be pissed. I like to get a bit of a buzz on and, like, you know, watching a film, but, you know, you're just a little bit, wee. But it wasn't that. I was just kind of just, I was literally drinking fizzy brown liquid and staring out the window. It's boring.
Well, I think that was the national thing for a bit. I definitely, in sort of April, May time, I think everyone did it for about 6 to 8 weeks and everyone went, oh, you know what? This is losing its edge.
But then it got to the point, you're like, what are we going to do? Like, there wasn't anywhere to go. You couldn't go to the cinema and you couldn't wander around the shops. So we just ended up, because Jade's really up on her cooking and absolutely, that's how she relaxes. So, and I've said this many times on here. So she was making these incredible cocktails and these ginormous feasts.
Yeah, Rich, we know.
It was so good, mate.
Rich, we all follow you on social media. Anyone who's listening to this podcast has seen hundreds of pictures of you gorging yourself on free gin and beautiful spreads that Jade's cooked. You're like, oh, yeah, it's a surprise, mate. Yeah, we've actually been having a nice... We know, Rich. You've been ramming it down the nation's throats for the whole thing.
Well, up your game. Get better lives. we were just keeping you entertained with our better things.
Very, very good of you to keep the nation's spirits up. Mm-hmm. Like when the Queen waves off her balcony to make us all feel better.
Yeah. Oh, I feel better now. She's said hello. So what are you going to do? So you're veggie for a bit?
Yeah, well, I bought a bicycle. I got the bounce on Boris there. I was a month ahead, which is good because you were already struggling to buy men's bicycles 6 weeks ago when I bought one.
Oh, really?
There's been a run on them. And obviously all the factories are closed, so there's like a lot of bicycle manufacturers saying you're not going to be able to get a bike to work 2021. So, they can prescribe people bikes if they like, but if there are no bikes, I mean, that's the perennial problem, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that whole thing, turning around and saying, like, one minute, yeah, go out and eat and support local businesses, and then it's like, oh, by the way, you're all too fat, and you need to work on that as well. And you're like, hang on a minute, mate, why don't you text your mate? Why don't you get Bezos round and get him to just invest a bit in some bicycle factories, you fucking helmet? It's not hard, is it? Why are you picking on us again?
I mean, that was great about lockdown, wasn't it? Because we all realised that now there is a national network of couriers for everything. Because previously, the only thing you could get delivered like that until about 10 years ago was pizza and cocaine. Like, famously.
Yeah.
Famously, that was it. And then everyone else cottoned on. They were like, that's... these pizzas and drug dealer guys, they've got something here. They're really ahead of the curve. So they so now you can get everything like that. So it's turned everybody into, we're all like the hedonism bot from Futurama now.
But what the thing is, we want all this stuff. We want to be able to just think something and it arrives. But then we moan because the shops are all closed down. Like, you know, we want it all. We want it always, don't we? We want to be able to go to the shops when we feel like it, but we want it to be delivered and we want this. Yeah, and it's, you know, Amazon has fucked the high street. And yet we're all moaning about where's the high street gone. I mean, come on, there has to be a moment where we go, we need to take some responsibility, surely.
Yeah, but I mean, I queued up once on record store day for an hour to get a couple of records that I wanted. And by the time I was there, they'd completely sold out. So then I just wandered home and ordered them off the internet. I mean, you can't help these people.
No. Yeah. Buy more. Do more.
You're talking very wistfully about shops there. Have you been to one recently?
Yeah. They're not horrible. Fun. They're not fun. What is annoying me is that there's half of us are wearing masks. And then there's the other half scoffing at us for wearing masks. There was a woman yesterday, and she was far too close, and she was just looking me up and down. And I went, "You're right." And she went, "Masks," and I just went, "Well, you're gonna die." And then I walked off. It just, you know,
a mate of mine pointed out the big mistake that the government made about the mask situation. It's a huge error, particularly I don't know about the rest of the world, but particularly in Britain. they told everyone that the principal reason you wear a mask is to protect other people. And everyone went, ah, fuck it.
Yeah, if I know.
If they just said, it's purely for you, this is only for your benefit, people would be wandering around with four of them on being like, look at my mask. But we're such a miserable bunch of selfish tosspots in this country. We're like, other people? Oh, fuck them then. I went to B&Q 2 weeks ago, and I was wearing a mask. About 100 people in there, and a friend of mine said I should write a complaint letter to B&Q about this, and I couldn't be asked because I'm lazy. So let me slagging B&Q off on this podcast be my complaint letter.
Let's do it.
This is insane in the membrane podcast.
It certainly is, mate.
It's one of the, you know, they're going to be quaking in their boots. I went in.
Don't come in here and take the piss. Get on with your fucking letter.
I haven't started yet.
I knew this would happen. You keep saying that coming on. I'm like, he's not coming on because he wants to. He's going to come on. He's going to take the piss, and then he's going to fuck off again with his shitty toes.
that's basically it. I'm only here to spite you and tell your listeners about all of the abusive things you text me. You're online being like, it's important that men's mental health, while at the same time text me, yeah, I bet you fat cunt.
It's got to go somewhere.
I told you, these screen grabs, mate, I could end you.
You're not the only one, mate. Some of the shit I've said to people.
I'll go and be in queue, about 100 people in there. I'm the only one wearing a mask. Fine. But I couldn't get anyone to help me. None of the staff would help me because everyone was scared of me because I had a mask on. So I was going, excuse me, where are the light bulbs? And people are backing away from me like I'm a zombie.
Really?
It was insane.
But the whole point of the, like we've said, the whole point of the mask is to protect others. So what is going on with people? It is, like you say, it's all too vague, isn't it? People aren't, unfortunately, the government needs to be more, you're doing this and you're doing that. And that's what people need. And then they're all...
Nice police state.
That's what you want. That's what you want. Get rid of the government, bring the cops in. I don't know, mate. So you're now on this health kick then? Are you getting healthy?
Yes, let's get down to mental health.
Come on, mate,
Hang
on a minute, Jade's chipping in. Hang on, what?
What's Garrett said in response to that?
In response to what?
Being on this health kick?
He's just about to tell me, he hadn't actually said anything.
Oh, he had two burgers yesterday,
did he? Jade tells me, two burgers, mate. Two.
I did have two burgers.
You come on here and you're ready to rip me to pieces, and then it turns out that
I wasn't ripping anyone to pieces. I did my first gig the last 2 days. So Jade and I did a classic road trip to a gig together.
Oh, I missed those days.
I know. So we stopped for the obligatory McDonald's. But excellent. I will say that I had an hour bike ride yesterday. So
that's all right. Counteract.
Well, I guess I'm spinning my wheels. Really?
Just making sure your bike doesn't seize up.
Yeah, absolutely.
What did Jade have?
She was very good. She just had some chips and a Coke Zero. So
chips and Coke Zero. All right. Okay. Here we are. All right. I was waiting to hear what this long menu you'd had. No. All right. Fair enough. How did you feel after your burgers, mate? How did you feel?
I felt great.
I knew you were good. That's the thing, isn't it? I sat in a Wimpy the other day on my own, and I had a half pounder
like
of chips.
Like a man from the past.
Yeah, it was a very retro lunch. I sat there and I was reading a magazine as well, not even looking at my phone. I was reading Mojo and I'm eating this half pounder and chips, and it was delightful. I had such a lovely time. I walked out and had a parking ticket because I hadn't read the sign properly. But so that burger cost me 65 quid.
but you did enjoy it.
I had a great time. Totally worth it.
Yeah, I went back. I was going down the gym this week, and then and doing the cycling. So I have been. I've been more active, and I've not been having three Deliveroos a day.
Well done, mate, because last time I was at your house, it was like you lived in a McDonald's burger packaging factory.
Look, if the wife goes away for a day or two, things escalate.
You're like Jade. I can see where Jade's been, like where she sat. She's like, the epicenter is clear. And then coming out from that, it's just shit everywhere. And I can see exactly. I go, right, okay, so you went out this time and you came. So you kicked your shoes off there. And then your socks came off over there. And I could just see where she's been. It's amazing. And yours, your, yeah. Well, you know what? I'd like to say you only live once, but there you have to find the balance, don't you? It's all very well having these blowouts, but now we're getting a bit older, as you found out to your cost.
Yeah,
things start to fall off.
Well, gout is like one of those things where you really, you're like, oh, I skipped diabetes and went straight to gout.
Yeah, well done me. What a clever chap I am.
That's very impressive.
Man.
I got on this like this doctor mandated health kick about 6 weeks ago. Mm. So going out cycling in the morning and exercising and trying to eat a bit better and not drinking all the time. And I felt really good. And people were asking me like, oh, you know, is it improving your mental health? And I was like, yeah, I think, you know, I genuinely think it is. And then I realised around the same time, I deleted Facebook and Twitter off my phone and just had, I just kept Messenger on there so you could keep in touch with people. But I would just read, because at the beginning of lockdown, you just look, constant news, constant feeds, constant everything. And it was like, everything was just getting a bit like, this many people have died, this has happened, so and so's about to go to war with so and so, and you're like, oh my God. And so I cleared all that off my phone and stopped looking at it. I'd look at the news in the morning and then not look at any of that. So I was talking to a mate of mine who was considering buying a bicycle, and I was like, to be honest, I don't know if it was the bicycle or the not looking at Twitter. I would, for economy's sake, I'd delete the Twitter app off your phone and see how you go with that, because bicycles are quite expensive.
I've had a couple of days off Twitter because we were doing it. There was a Twitter silence, wasn't there, because of all the anti-Semitic. They hadn't acted quickly.
I don't know, Rich.
Wiley. Oh, he's not on it. So we all went. You know what?
Were some people fighting?
Yeah, on Twitter. Yeah. Funnily enough.
Oh my God.
Mad, isn't it? I know. I don't know what's happened to the place. Excuse me a minute, Garrett. 1 second. Yeah. Jade, what are you doing? Thank you, my love. She's chatting away like she's like nothing's happening. Doing me work. Did that sound really aggressive? It probably did.
It did, yeah.
Oh God. I was doing it playfully, but she can't see my face, and neither can the listeners. So it just sounds like I'm just shouting abuse across the flat. Oh God.
For the benefit of the listener, would you please go immediately and have a look at a high resolution publicity shot of Rich Wilson smiling?
Oh God. But yeah, I've been off Twitter for a few days and it's been bliss.
That's great, isn't it?
Bliss. I don't need to get my news from there. If I need, I'm kind of aware that everything's fucked. So until it's becoming less fucked, I don't really have to look.
No, and you can go on, like, you can go on a news website. The BBC have got this news website and you can go on, and it's pretty good. And they lay out like facts. It's written by professionals and there's very little hyperbole in it.
I'll be checking that out. Send me a link so I'll can find it.
Stick it in the show notes.
But you have got to get fit because you have some news, mate, don't you?
Yes, I do have some news. This was one of the other things that we were chasing along. I found out 12 weeks ago now that I was going to be a dad.
Yes. I am so excited for you, mate.
Yeah, well, I told you a while ago and you were like, well, you've got to come on the podcast to discuss that, because the reason I wouldn't have you on before is I can't have a comedian on just moaning about being a comedian. And I was like, that's fair enough.
Stop showing people behind the curtain, mate.
Well, I can't have you on, Garrett. You'll tell people that I call you a fat cunt and just whinge about being a comic. And I'm like, that's good, but I respect your decision.
Yeah, now you've actually got something to add to the podcast. So
yeah, I mean, I had an amazing thing this morning. I was due to go on this podcast, right? So we're talking about men and mental health. So I expressed yesterday to a friend of mine that I was concerned about another friend of mine because you know, it's difficult times. Mm. He's having a, he's in a very stressful position. So this other friend called him up this morning to tell him that I was concerned about him.
Oh, yeah,
and it all kicked off. So the three of us were having a massive row this morning about, and he's like going, look, if you're concerned about me, don't you dare tell anyone that you're concerned about me. It's embarrassing. And then we had a fight for like 2.5 hours.
Shit.
And then, and it's all fine now. It's all sorted now. You know, good bloke stuff. And they said, they were like, right, let's have a game of poker. I said, I can't have a game of poker. And they said, why not? I said, I've got to go on Rich Wilson's podcast to discuss how men are rubbish at talking about their feelings. And they went, you're not going to talk about this. And I said, I sort of have to, don't I? I mean, it's a case in point.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? We talk, everyone's like, we are, myself included, we're all talking about opening up and it's good to talk and it's this and that. But sometimes it's, I had it a few days ago with someone, a mutual friend of ours, and we had a massive ding dong because, yeah, I tried to help and it went south very quickly.
Well, I think because of lockdown, everybody is super punchy. And also at the same time super sensitive, so it's the worst possible combination for all trying to come together to talk about things, because everyone's on guard and alert, but also very fantastically tactless because we've spoken to nobody.
That's what's going on. There's been a few times I have spoken to some real people, and they've genuinely looked to me like I've said, do you mind if I just sit on your kid for a minute? They've just and I'm like, oh, gee, yeah, I've forgotten how to talk to actual people. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really bad. Well, that's another thing with the Twitter and whatnot, isn't it? Because we're just, everyone's behind keyboard going, come on then!
Yeah.
And then, and that's it. That's the broadest amount of communication you've had with other human beings. And you step outside your house and you go, oh, people are actually quite reasonable.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. You forget, don't you? You just think, well, because we judge it, we judge everything by Twitter. So we're like, oh, I've said this to a mate. I said, oh God, the world is just going bananas, and he said, what do you mean? I went, oh, we've got to do this. We've got to out all the sex offenders, and we've got to do this. We've got to do that. And he went, what are you talking about? And he just works. He works for Bank of America. He has no idea.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Like, normal people have got things. You're going on and going, this terrible thing's happened today, and this person is having this person, and they're having a fight. And, you know, what do you think about Amber Heard and Johnny Depp? And they're like, mate, I've been at work. Like,
yeah. I've been trying to keep a roof over my head for 4 months. I don't know about you. Yeah.
What are you doing? I was like, I'm playing an online computer game based on fighting. and I've completely misunderstood. I thought it was to do with real life, but it's not. It's just twats in a hellscape fighting.
Exactly. It.
Probably a good time to tell your listeners to follow you on.
Oh, that'd be at the end. That'd be it. I don't even know if there are many listeners on Twitter. I think there's we've got a lot of Facebook. I don't know about any Instagram, but I don't know if
Have you got
I don't. I feel like an absolute paedophile just having a thing on there.
Yeah.
We did it with lockdown, because obviously, and then Jade, it just went mad for Jade, and she got millions of people watching all of her videos. She's like, you've got to get on TikTok. And I'm not a TikTok person. I'm a middle-aged man, for God's sake. It's not for me. What am I doing?
No.
You know, and it's not, imagine you on there, for fuck's sake.
You and me going on TikTok would be exactly the same as us rocking up at the skate park with baseball caps backwards and be like, hey guys, want to do a kick flip?
Well, this is gnarly.
Yeah, it's
It's not for us.
And I'm comforted by that. I think it's good.
You get to, it's like people, I hear people of our age talking about the youth and how they speak, and you're like, oh, that sounds ridiculous. Because it's supposed to. You're not supposed to get it. You're not supposed to understand that. And you're certainly not supposed to join in. So pack it in.
Yeah, you know, you're supposed to shake your fist in the air and go, I know your dad, now run away. You know,
I don't even know my dad. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's your role. I think there's the points in your life where you get to that, and you either fight it. Like, I was having a conversation with our mutual friend Gordon Southern at a bar in Australia when we were doing a festival. And we were both talking about house prices in Essex, because we both owned homes in Essex. And at one point, he just looked at me and said, "Are we two middle-aged men talking about house prices at a bar?" And I said, "Gordon, the people we're with, they're over there having a conversation about Tinder." I was like, "Do you know anything about Tinder?" And he was like, "No." Yeah. So neither do I, and I find the whole thing exhausting to listen to. So yeah. Should we just admit that we are middle-aged men with mortgages and carry on having this conversation because we've got nothing to add to that one? And he was like, "Yeah, fair enough."
It's true, though. It's true. You've got to know your place and be fine with it. You've had your, you know, it's not like life isn't over just because you're not running around in some shitty nightclub that you didn't even like going to in the first place. It's just different now. There are other ways that you'll find to enjoy yourself, you know. It will come at a cost. You might lose a toe, as you have, but it's just, it's what happens. Life happens.
Lose a toe, gain a bicycle.
Is the name of your sex tape.
Yeah. There's a wonderful thing about having a bicycle, Rich. Is if you go out on a bicycle at 7:30 in the morning, you will just pass scores and scores of people who look like us, who have come to the same conclusion, and you give each other a nice little nod, like, yeah.
I've started doing this couch to 5K, and right. I was running around the other day. I've been staying in at Paul Sweeney's in West Ham, and I'm running around the canals there, and there was a fella with a personal trainer, and he just looked at me, and honestly, his eyes said, "Help me." I'm sure they did, because it was just him and this personal trainer underneath this bridge by this canal, and I'm like, "Oh God, what is wrong with us?" It's just we can't, we've done this to ourselves, haven't we? You know, if we'd have been a bit more sensible, we wouldn't have to drag our turdy bodies around canals. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of people complaining the other day about the government having a go at people of our girth, and I couldn't understand what the issue was, because I've been through this once before with smoking. Like, yeah, it's fair enough, I'll go and do it outside. And they're like, "You should lose some weight, or you know the obesity crisis is going to start crushing all the hospitals fairly soon." And you're like, "Yeah, I read that a while ago." Like, I'm basically in a health condition where if a doctor tells me anything's wrong with me, I have to just nod and be like, "Yeah, that was my fault." Because fair cop. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I smoked all that. That was definitely me. Oh, no, I ate that. Yeah, no, there was warnings on the boxes. Yeah, but you know, not take to social media and be like, "It's fine." You go, "No, it's fun, but it's not fine, is it?"
It's all. I got a message from Sarah Asbury, who's listening to this, I imagine. And thank you for your message, Sarah. It did make me laugh because I put on the video, I said, this is the first day of me not being a fat piece of shit. Yeah. And she said, "Don't be so hard on yourself. Got to change your language." And I was half joking. I don't really think I'm a fat piece of shit, but, you know, and I'm like, look, I get it. But there has to be, you got to still have some fun, you know. You still got to, I want to lose a bit of weight, but I can still call myself a fat piece of shit, jokingly.
Absolutely.
But I know she didn't mean any offence. She was being lovely. And thank you, Sarah. I appreciate that. But, yeah, I am, you know.
But he is a fat piece of shit.
Has you sorted this out with your mate then today? Is that been now?
Oh, yeah. It was basically, it was a classic lad fight. But everybody was upset and then realised at the end of the day, everyone was upset about the fact that as a group of people in a triangle, we had all mutually expressed concern.
You're arguing over the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, we were just concerned about our mates. And what it ended up was a conversation checking that we were all right. But we had to have a fight to get into it.
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, sometimes men do get very defensive I don't know, it's a funny one. Like I say, the other day when I had a ding-dong with someone and I started off is, you know, like, "Look, mate, you know, this, whatever's gone on, I get it," and blah, 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 blah. And then he started saying some fucking mad shit. And then I'm like, "Dude, don't do that. Don't escalate this. I'm trying to help. And then it went over the edge, and I lost my temper. I'm not proud of myself. Because, like you say, we've all been hemmed in for God knows how long. So as much as you try and keep the lid on, there's going to be a hole in your canister somewhere.
We're all trying to feel something, Rich, so we're coming out swinging.
Because we're so frustrated, I think that's what it is as well. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on. One minute, this, you know, everything, the world has ended. Mm. And then the next minute, they're going, oh, yeah, but you can go and do this, but you can't do that. And you can't do that, but you can do this. And it's just frustrating, isn't it? And then, you know, I see all the kids out here, and we live in Lee, and it's on the all the kids come down, and then they're all fighting and stabbing each other, and God knows what. And you're like, fucking hell. Like,
if they're doing that at the moment, Rich, you really should call the authorities.
They're not doing it now. That's what happened, though. There was a massive kickoff. I'm on the phone to the old Bill going, you got to come down here. And I'm like, oh, I'm that dude now. I'm the guy that's not even gone over the road to tell him to pipe down. I've stayed in my flat. And I'm ringing. Yeah, yeah. I'm that guy ringing from inside his house.
Oh, it's so good. The first time you make your first official noise complaint to the council, it's just the most liberating thing. Excuse me, some people are having a party.
You just have to accept it, as we already said. That's where you're at. That's where you are.
I don't go to fireworks parties. I put up posts about how they affect dogs. That's.
Moaning at your neighbours for not clapping loud enough for the NHS.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
I did it once, and then I kept forgetting, and I was like, fuck it.
There's a charter somewhere with your name on it going, he didn't clap on these days.
Yeah, I've never said anything to my neighbours. I'm not that sort of person, so.
Are you not? Do you know them?
No. And to be honest, because I've got a weird job, they probably think I'm a very strange sort of person. You know, I sort of leave at 5 o'clock and I come back at 2 a.m. and then I stand in the garden smoking cigarettes till 3.
Would you say are you a people person, Garrett? All jokes aside, I know I take the piss, but do you like people?
I mean, some people, yeah. I'm a very much, you've got to judge it on a case-by-case basis, haven't you? Because a lot of people are awful.
Yes, you're very right, yeah.
Yeah. I'm very, I'm either one thing or the other. I need a huge amount of solitude to maintain an even keel. But then I also require social input. But I can't, I need those as two extremes. I can't stand the middle ground between those two things.
No, so and it's all on your terms.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. So I want to be on my own when I want to be on my own. And when I want to be around people, I will summon you.
Yeah, I'll go and find some people.
You're going to find some people.
I don't want them in my space.
No. I'll go to their space and I'll.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll. Yeah. And yeah. I'll ruin that for a bit and then I'll come back again.
Yeah. That's the idea. No, it's good. I mean, I like it. I'm a pub person. You know, I like a nice pub chat, as you and I have had on many of many occasions. But yeah, I'm not that comfortable in a crowd, to be honest.
No. How are you feeling about the impending fatherhood? I mean, it's such a journey,
well,
isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
To this point.
Let's get into that.
Let's start asking
me the serious searching questions.
Well, all I've done is take the piss, and I don't know if I'm going to lose listeners now. They're going, he's not who we thought he was. Oh, God.
No, you're exactly who they thought you were.
Yeah. Fat piece of shit.
A lovable rogue.
That's it, yeah. Someone once called me a lovable wanker, and to this day, I'm not sure if that was good.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, it depends who said it and how, but I'd chalk it up as a win if I was you.
Yeah, why not? How are you feeling? How are you feeling about it? Because this is, like we said, it's been a journey to get here.
Yes, it has been a journey to get here. Yeah, I guess we've got to do some background if we're going to start talking about it. Because you and I are talking about it because obviously we, you know, you were there at the time. We went through it.
Yes.
So, yeah, this is our second pregnancy. And the first one 2 years ago ended very badly twice. So it kicked. It started off, we thought we'd had a miscarriage. And that, you know, we kind of went away and dealt with that. And Sarah was just getting back to work and I was just gigging again. And then a couple of weeks later, like Sarah went out for the night and then she collapsed and had to be rushed to hospital. We had this horrific situation in the hospital, went on for a few hours, and eventually it had turned out that she hadn't had a miscarriage. She had an ectopic pregnancy, which had been missed. And then, and it had ruptured, which is...
An ectopic, it's in the tubes, isn't it?
It's in the fallopian tube. So, it just unfortunately, in the first round, it got missed. And so we got quite far along and ruptured, and then it was all very serious there for a bit. Then we had to get over that. So we've been trying again for about 6 months. It was quite a surprise, really, in lockdown to get the news, because it's one of those things, you know, you carry on the plan and everything, and then it happens and you go, oh, this is fantastic. This is what we've always wanted. And you go, ah, it's a very bad time.
Yes.
You go, it's a sort of a rotten time to be unemployed.
But did you start worrying about what had gone before?
And like, absolutely. Yeah. The first 6 weeks of it were a kind of roller coaster. Because also, I'm trying to keep, I'm very stressed about it, but I was trying to keep that away from Sarah and, you know, do my job. keep her calm. So it was, so I had to, you know.
Yeah. It was funny when the other stuff happened, and it was funny because you want to reach out and say, are you all right? But it's a ridiculous question because obviously you're not all right. You know?
Yeah.
What else do you say? It's a weird one.
Well, it was an interesting one because we were going to the Edinburgh Festival sort of immediately afterwards. And I ended up doing a show about it. Well, not really about it. I did a show where I did sort of 45 minutes of what I had. And then I told the story about why I couldn't finish the show, and for what it was worth, explained how laughter was important to me and Sarah for getting through that. And I didn't have time really to, that was just a, it was either cancel it or do that. And I didn't have time to kind of process it all.
No.
I was like, right, I'll just do this thing. So we both kind of had this thing to focus on, and that was really useful. But it was, because it was so fresh, a friend of Sarah's is a clinical psychologist, and she gave me a bunch of exercises to do.
Oh, really?
Like in and around the show, sort of. Because I cleared the decks. I didn't do any extra shows, and I made sure I kind of had an hour or two beforehand. I could just go to the park and chill out, and then go and get my headspace right to do it and to tell the story. But it was kind of interesting, the idea of kind of reliving it for 25 nights in a row.
Straight away as well.
Straight away. And, you know, Hannah said, look, there are a couple of things that you can do to kind of take you, like, mentally out of that space afterwards to kind of decompress. And it was really good of her to do that. But as it happened, I didn't end up needing any of that because, I'd done, in the middle of July, Deborah Francis-White is a mate of mine. She does the Guilty Feminist podcast.
Yeah, excellent.
She asked me to come on there and to talk about the show, and I did. And as a result of that, a huge number of people came down who had experienced stuff like that, men and women, and not just miscarriages and things. So there was a guy who came down whose brother had committed suicide just 2 months before.
Oh, shit.
And his family had found the same thing, that laughter was the thing that kind of got them through. So you had these people who'd heard about it and who had experiences of using laughter and humour and things to get themselves through those periods in their life. And they came down to see the show and were really generous about talking to me afterwards. So I ended up kind of after every show, I had this great kind of decompression where I would talk to people about their experiences and what happened to them and, you know, how humour was important for them to get through and stuff. So it ended up being just the most cathartic thing.
Yeah, it's incredible. And because it was such a bad experience that you'd been through. I mean, you know, you nearly lost Sarah and...
Yeah.
Which was, when you were telling me, it was just... I can't imagine what you must have been going through, and being a you know, not for want of a better phrase, you know, a real man.
Yeah.
I don't think he really knew how to process those feelings. Because I know no. I would, if I'd have been in that position, I would have been the same. I would have been all sort of locked in, being like, a way that I think I'm supposed to behave versus how I want to behave, you know?
Well, you know what? There are kind of schools of thought on that, right? So there was a... I'll tell you a story. You know, you might agree with this, you might disagree with it, but I will say it was the most helpful thing that anyone has ever said to me. Mm. So in the middle of it, I was talking to my mum, and she's a very, you know, she's very old school.
Mm.
And I was talking to her and about what happened, and Sarah had come home from the hospital at that point, and I was just sort of going to pieces talking to her on the phone.
Mm.
And she said to me, "Where is your wife?" And I said, "She's upstairs." And she said to me, "You can do this, but you can't do it now because you've got a job to do. You're a man and you're a husband and your wife needs you. So you need to park this and go and do your job. And you can do this later, but you can't do it now because somebody needs you."
Yeah,
And I was like, that was the single most helpful thing that anyone said to me, because it was like, you've got a role and you've got a job to do.
Mm.
And you have kind of sense of purpose and you're like, right, okay. Yeah, good. That, you know,
that's what you needed, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a really good, it was a fantastic bit of parenting, really. You know, just kind of a...
Yeah, like the time that there is, yeah.
There's a time and a place, and it's very unfashionable to tell people to pull themselves together, but actually it was entirely appropriate. And
Well, you like you say, Sarah needed you to for both of you. To support you both. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So that was, yeah, that was good. And then sort of get through that, get for her to get well. And then we were just faced, it was very lucky, really, kind of faced with this thing of being like, oh, shit, what are we going to do about this show that's booked? And the fact that it was so close and there's such a huge amount of money riding on it, there wasn't really an option. So there wasn't an option of what to do. So it just became a focus, and then
it did you a favor.
I honestly thought that I was like, right, okay, well, in September I'm really gonna have to deal with this. And I didn't, because I'd sort of realized that I dealt with it through talking about it, like through the process of performing a show about it and then discussing it with people afterwards, and people sharing their experience and stuff. I'd sort of had, I guess you could say, like, therapy via the back door, you know? Mm. So if you'd said to me, right, go and talk to somebody about this, I'd have gone, that was fucking stupid. But I guess, you know, through a set of mechanisms that I understood, I did that myself. You know, I kind of went the long way around, but I did ultimately, after doing that, I had spoken to scores and scores of people who were telling me their experience. And even now, because the show got released as... the show's been released as an album, so I still get people contacting me about it. A really good friend of mine from university who I'd lost touch with, he got in touch to say that exactly the same thing had happened to him and his wife like 4 years ago, and we ended up having a chat about it. So it's kind of one of those things that it just keeps...
Yeah, there is that. There is, yeah, go on.
Yeah, it just keeps kind of giving like that. I mean, one of the things that I did think, as you're saying, like dealing with it there. I don't know. Like, I came around to do it again. I put it down and I didn't perform it for 6 months. And then I had to do it at Soho and Leicester. And I did it at Leicester for the first night. And I'd kind of forgotten, like, the effect that it had on me. Until after exactly, you know, same thing happened. This couple came up and the same thing had happened to them the week before. And they hadn't heard about the show. They saw it by accident. Like they were in the pub and they took a flyer on it and came to see it. And it just so happened. So I ended up having an amazing conversation with them.
That's amazing. And that's why it's important. It is important to reach out. And you don't necessarily, like I say all the time, get therapy if you can, go and talk to someone. But then again, you can find your own way, like you have. You found a way of dealing with things that you didn't go have to sit in a leather chair. You could, you found a way of getting it out of your system, and then and people then used your show. That was their way of coping with things, which is incredible. Mm. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I'd stop short of saying my show was... I don't want to kind of elevate it to this point where it was just like, yeah, it was very important for other people, but
No.
It certainly, for them, it gave them like the opportunity to share stories with me, which I'm very grateful to them for doing. But it certainly got to a point when I finished that, like agents and things were like, well, because we were going to record it for this album, and they were going, oh, we're going to maybe do it in July or we'll do it in August. And I just had to say at a point where there was one date left, and I said, you have to do the deal with the record company and it has to be recorded on that date. And they're like, right. I was like, because I don't want to do it anymore. There has to come a point for me and for Sarah and everything where we go, right, that was good. Yeah. Like, that dealt with that, but I have to put that down and move on with my life, because you can't keep reliving these things or going over, you know.
No. Did it help Sarah as well?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, she worked on it with me, and I think for her as well, she was kind of... It was really good for her to see the reaction it got. I mean, I don't, you know, it's not my place to speak for her, but I think...
No.
I think she did. I mean... I think it really it did help. I mean, it helped both of us to have a focus, and it also helped that there was something broadly positive that came out of it.
Yeah,
and that's certainly what I think our experience as a couple has been in terms of what her. You'd have to ask her what her her personal experience of it was, but yeah, I think it was very positive, and it in the immediate aftermath, it gave us something to focus on. You know.
Mm. And I've had conversations with people recently, because there was an article in the Evening Standard, and they were like, what, explaining why comedy is important, and there were a few stories, and I had one. There's a couple, Mark and his lovely wife, that came and saw me in Edinburgh just by chance. They just came and saw us, and he said afterwards, he said they'd lost their son not so long ago. And he goes, it's the first time I've seen my wife laugh since that time. And you're like, fuck. You know, we sometimes think that what we do is just us dicking around.
Yeah.
But what we give is relief from what, because the world is fucked. It's a bit, it's not this, it's, we, you know, we're told to live a certain way and be a certain way, but.
I always find it fascinating that comedians have this kind of, there are certain type of people that are like, yeah, revolution, and, you know, we can affect political change. Well, revolutions only come out of situations of total desperation. I mean, if you read George Orwell's On the Road to Wigan Pier, there's a bit, you know, somebody might talk and go, he's wrong about that, because it's been 20 years since I read it. But they're sort of talking about why fascism didn't take off in Britain in the 1930s like it did in Spain and Italy and Germany. Because, the social situations were there for it to. And Orwell puts it down at a certain point to the availability of luxuries in Britain. Like, you could go to the pictures, or you could pawn your suit and get fish and chips every, and this kind of availability of entertainment and music hall and luxuries, this release valve was able, would just meant that it didn't build up into this huge, like, pressure cooker thing. So I always think it's very funny when comedians are like, yeah, we're going to social change, and blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, shut up then, because we are really the...
we're
the release valve here. We are supposed to be... We're easing the pressure off, which is a good thing. I don't know why you want things to boil over into...
No, you don't really, I know.
Yeah, absolute desperation and chaos. But yeah, we do provide a... again, I don't want to get into... We could sit here, bigging each other up about how important what we do is. And, you know, I'd say that we probably will when we've turned the microphones off, but it's not really fair on the listeners to ask them to sit through.
Imagine. Oh, God.
Two broadly speaking unemployed men talking about the important contribution they make to society.
was it you that said about revolution? Was it you? It's all about, what we need is a revolution. And you're like, no, you don't, because this is what happens when you have an actual revolution.
Yeah, people, this sort of romantic, people are like, yeah, revolution. It's like, if you look into it, generally what happens after revolutions is a lot of death, usually a bit of genocide, and bad things, and then things settle down decades afterwards.
That's the key point, isn't it? It's not overnight.
It's not overnight, and it's generally a miserable thing for, you know. I tend to think people who are kind of keen on that kind of thing are the people who would be least affected by it.
Yeah. Well, it was like, well, Red Richardson said it on his episode of this. He said, Russell Brand wanging on about starting a revolution. He goes, yeah, yours would be the first fucking house they go to, Russell Brand.
Also, he doesn't know what it means. Like, I found that so odd. He's like, yeah, it's my new book, Revolution. You're like, do you know what a revolution is?
he's got an idea. There's been a film that he's seen.
He's like, I heard John Lennon say it once. It's because it's sometimes attached to sort of nice things like, it's tech revolution. But then if you look into that and goes, what's that? Tech revolution. Oh, we all carry around these hate tablets in our pockets. We're being spied on all the time and we argue 24/7 on Twitter. You go, oh, actually, yeah, it is quite nasty. Industrial revolution, like change things like, yeah, but you look, scratch the surface of that. It was fairly miserable for the people involved. So, yeah, generally, revolution's absolute nightmare. And it's ridiculous that a comedian came out with a book called, yeah, Revolution. And Red's right. He would be exactly the sort of prick that they'd burn his house down. I've seen people tweeting stuff about obviously the defund the police campaign is quite a complicated one, but I have seen some people who I know who are like proper middle class people who are tweeting like they just finished a 15 stretch of bird for a crime they didn't commit.
Yeah, do you know what it actually means to defund the police? Yeah,
they're like, oh yeah, defund the police. You're like going, you are a middle class tosspot, and you are the first people that bad men would come and roll all over.
This comes up a lot actually, because it's middle class people that, and no disrespect to anybody, but you know, they've got time. I know you're middle class.
But I would just like to say maximum disrespect to the middle classes, and I say that.
Because you're upper class.
No. I say that as a middle class. I'm incredibly middle class. I'm talking to you on my MacBook Pro, and I've just had a coffee I made in my own espresso machine. I work in the arts. I got out of bed at 11 a.m. I'm an absolute nightmare middle class person. We're the worst people. Absolute awful.
I have, that's it, my life on the surface. Well, I mean, I don't come from a middle class background, but my life.
Do you not?
Is.
You never mention it.
Yeah, I'm part of the, I'm the earth that this world was built on.
I can smell the jellied eels from here.
It's not real. It's not got sand in it. But I do. I wang on about that all the time. But really, my life.
Oh no, it's very charming. Yeah. To where the working class, proper working class people don't have figurines of the Beatles.
You piece of shit.
You're a man in your 40s who owns like 700 pairs of shoes.
Yeah, that's true.
That would be a shit Hovis advert.
20 pairs of Dr. Martens at 120 a go. Yeah, I know.
I were a lad, Dad used to put his Dayglow moon boots on to go kayaking in Lee.
My dad, when he was a kid, they never bought him. My dad is convinced that he invented the platform shoe.
Yeah.
Because he had his dad, instead of buying them new shoes, he would just keep resoling the old ones, but not take the old soles off. So they just have these, and he said some bloke looked at them one day and went, they're cool. And then in the 70s, suddenly platform shoes were everywhere. But then
presumably someone owes him some money. This is the fortune.
Well, let's find out. And then the summer would roll around, and instead of buying him sandals or some summer shoes, they would just chop the ends off the shoes so that his toes would poke out.
So your dad was, what you're saying is your dad was a hipster.
No gears on his bicycle.
I can see that.
So he comes around here and there's nothing but shoes, and you can understand why he's fucked off. Yeah. And he goes, those ones aren't even, you've not even worn those. I go, I'll get to it eventually, Dad. You know, whereas my dad had to walk around with these homemade platform boots with no toes in. Yeah, I know. I should know my place.
Yeah, I mean, I've got three pairs of shoes.
That's, your clothes are function only. Come on, you're a guy that you don't give a shit about clothing. That there's that old saying that they literally stop you getting arrested when you go outside.
How very rude you are.
You told me though, you go, I see a shirt I like, so I buy 20 of them.
Yeah, I can't stand shopping. I can't stand shopping. So I go in, I've started buying the same pair of shoe when the shoe wears out. I'll just go, I was like, that one
just
was
buy
good.
Another pair.
I don't want to put any brain power whatsoever into picking another. I hate shops. I hate shops. I hate the whole experience. No. So, yeah, I'll go in. If I find a shirt that fits, I'll say to the bloke, show me all the shirts you've got in that size. And then I'll buy as many of them as I can afford. And then I won't go shopping for 4 years.
Which is really how it should be, to be fair. Yeah. I mean, yeah. This is an extravagant house. This flat is just... Half the stuff here is ridiculous. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know. Yeah. But then
it's like an Oxfam shop that's just like down the road from Elton John.
Oh my God. Whenever anyone says to me, "Have you got this?" I go, "Yeah, probably." And then I'll go and look in a trunk, and of course I've got a pigeon mask, and of course there are 8 cat masks, and angels' wings, and some other mad shit.
I'm just fun.
There she is. Here's Jade, the queen of fun.
Yeah. We're talking about comedians being important before we got onto shoes.
We were.
Yeah. What an important bunch of people we are.
I tell you what though, now Sarah's pregnant again. It's exciting. How are you feeling about it? Are you ready to be a dad?
Am I ready to be? I don't know. I mean, what does it even mean? It seemed to be.
Oh, you'll find out, mate.
Well, this is it, isn't it? It seems very complicated these days. There seem to be a lot of wasps' nests you have to. I was just telling you that story. I can't remember if I was telling the story. I did it on stage. I was having a conversation with this bloke at a gig, and he was telling me, we were on a pint afterwards, and he was telling me he's got a teenager. And he said, you know, there's all this sort of difficulty with bullying at school. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, there's always been bullying. And he said, no, it's very different now because they've all got Facebook and iPhones. And I was looking at him going like, what do you mean? And he said, well, all the kids have got iPhones. And I was like, I didn't know that. And he was like, it was like a dog talking to a cat. We had no idea. Like, I don't pay any attention to young people. I'm going to have to now. But yeah. I didn't know that they had all this stuff. And he said, yeah, they've all got Facebook accounts and they've all got Twitter and all this stuff. So bullying is insane. And he go, yeah, well, of course it is. And I said, because you've given them, and he was like, well, you've got to give them an iPhone. And I said, why? And he said, yeah, it's a brilliant tool. And I was like, yeah, it's a tool, isn't it? And what have we known for centuries that you don't give children tools?
Right? It's true.
And he said, he was like, oh no, it's complicated. And I said, it's not complicated. If I showed up at your son's school tomorrow morning and I gave them all hammers, by the end of the day, some of them would be dead. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know whether adults lost their confidence. They go, well, it's brilliant for them to be able to do all these sort of things. And go, it would be absolutely marvellous for a 7-year-old to be able to drive a car, but there's a load of very good reasons we don't allow that to happen. And
it's true, though. But what will happen is you can either give them a phone and then there's a potential for them to be bullied, or don't give them a phone and they will be bullied.
Definitely bullied, yeah. No, it's one of those, it's like the face mask things. You really need the government to step in because no one's going to, It's one of those things. Like, there was a point where you had to have, I think the internet's probably getting to that level now where, there's a point where you could just drive wherever you like, you know, Mr. Toad doing whatever you like. And then somebody came along and said, you know what, we need a highway code and licenses. Like, I think I was talking to Jade about this. Like, she was saying, because obviously she's a woman in the public eye, so she gets a huge amount of abuse and death threats. And you hear this stuff from friends of yours, and you go, God, this is absolutely appalling. And he goes, well, there's nothing you can do about it. You go, yeah, there is. I mean, if you had to have your actual name in a photograph of yourself next to these comments, it's like, you can't stand in a Sainsbury's telling people you're going to knife them. Because the someone will get the authorities.
If you're on these things, you should have your face on it.
Yeah,
that's what it should have. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and then you'd be less likely to be gobbing off.
Yeah, it'd be fine. I think that would just level everything out a bit.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not. But that's one thing you look at and go, oh God, I don't know. I don't know how to navigate all that stuff as an adult, so I have absolutely no idea how to take a child through it. Oh, I was talking to a mate of mine about, we were talking about religion, and because I was raised Catholic, because my family are Irish immigrants, and that's, you know, my dad's not a particularly big God person, and I asked him, you know, why did you raise a Catholic? And he was like, well, it's your culture. And he said, I thought it was important to raise you with culture, because people who have culture are better able to deal with other people who have culture.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I thought was an interesting take on it. It's like, you know, if you meet someone with a different culture, you've got something to share and exchange. People who have no culture fear other cultures.
that's bang on. Yeah.
Yeah, so people who don't have like a sense of themselves fear other people who do. Whereas if you have a kind of sense of your roots and who you are, you're not scared of other people who do as well. Which I thought was very good justification.
That's excellent.
For it.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine, I think, you know, you can, and then you can take it and leave it. I left it, my sister left it, but then she decided, my sister did baptize her sons. So even though, like, she left it early, she didn't get confirmed. She decided at 12, this isn't for me. And my parents were like, cool, no problem at all. So I thought it was, and she was like, yeah, I want to give my kids the same option. But I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was like, well, you know, I wouldn't have anything to do with the Catholic Church. And I was like, why not? And he was like, well, it's a huge, sinister organisation, largely staffed by paedophiles. And I was like, mate, your kid's got a Facebook account. Calm down.
yeah, the world's run by paedophiles. But you'll find a way. You will. I mean, it's a lot more complicated than when I was a dad. I mean, I was a dad in the 90s. And, you know,
90s dads.
Yeah, far more innocent time.
Yeah.
We had one bar on the fire. We had,
had 100 more, shoes then.
You were gay if you had more than two pairs of shoes. But it was.
You had to keep all the Beatles figurines in the wardrobe.
Well, that's what I'm out. You just look at me in the dark when you're on your own. You'll find a way. You will figure it out. Instinct will kick in, and you'll figure it out. You'll be doing things that you didn't even know that you could do. That's what I found. Suddenly, I just did it. You just.
Well, how was it for you? Because you were quite young, weren't you?
I was, and I wasn't. I was ill prepared at 20 years old. I'd say that, but I just kind of got on with it. You just did. You just went, all right, I'm a dad now. This other person needs me to not fuck this up. And even though I was a baby myself, looking back, you kind of... And I made some mistakes, because of course I did. I was only a kid. But you figure it out, you'll be great. You'll be a great dad.
My Uncle Paul was telling me he was having an argument with my cousin, and... he was a teenager at the time, and he was giving it this, that, and the other thing. And Paul just said to him, he was like, oi, calm down. You need to give me a break. You are the only thing I have ever got in my life that did not come with a fucking instruction manual.
It's true. No one tells you that Jade and I have this conversation all the time. It's like, once you have a child, that child is your life. There's no, like, you know, it's not like, oh, well, let's go and do something else for a bit. From the moment you wake up to the time you go to bed, that child is all you focus on. All the people you know, they'll have kids, and that's all they talk about. It's going to be that. You're going to be a parent, and you're going to be amongst other parents. That's, I think, where that might be where you might struggle. You'll be great as a dad.
It's other parents.
Other parents are fucking annoying.
Yeah, I've got very little interest in that, which is terrible, really.
I can't wait to join you at the school gate to see what happens when you have to stand there with other parents waiting for your child to come out of school. That's
good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't react well to. Yeah.
Jade said, "You're right. Waiting a car."
I didn't do well with teachers the first time round, and
no,
I've not met many in my adult life that well at all really, so that's a concern. Having to talk to teachers, that's gonna be a tough one.
I can't wait, but you're excited.
Am I excited?
On the whole.
Yes, I am. Yeah, it's great. It's as we said, it's been a long old road. So it was very nice that it happened. Circumstances, as we said, you know, are not ideal. But then,
no.
When are they? You would be struggling to find. I say circumstances aren't ideal. Actually, that's just a fucking stupid negative way of looking at it, because. The very fact, like during the pregnancy, we've been here together. Like normally, Sarah works 9 to 5, and I'm on the road, so like I'm away a lot. So yeah. And now, like right now, today, I would be going to Edinburgh for the whole month of August.
Yeah,
and she would be down here. She would be down here working in the second trimester of pregnancy, which so you know,
of course, yeah.
Another way of looking at it is it's an absolutely brilliant time.
It's perfect timing. You're going to be there for the whole thing.
Yeah. But, as I say, I was raised as an Irish Catholic, so I tend not to look on the bright side of things.
You feel guilty when you do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's not naturally where the needle rests. I mean, it's an absolute headache. I mean, this time, I'm going to say, last time I was completely clueless. This is probably, you know, another area we should get into, because there's a thing that guys don't know about, and all women know about it, guys don't know about it. The thing they call the 12-week secret. That the huge number of pregnancies that end in miscarriage. It's absolutely tragic. The statistics are huge. In the first 12 weeks, it's very, very dicey. And I think there's this... For guys, we have this attitude to pregnancy, I think, that it's very simple. And it's not. It's incredibly complicated. And it's very dangerous. And it's a huge... And I think, you know... Women discuss that as they grow up and they mature, and they don't have that kind of I think secrecy is probably the wrong word, but we don't know about it. Like, I don't know about you, like, I wasn't beyond sort of basic, you know, what you learn in biology. There wasn't really any you know, there's a lot of things teenage boys go, don't get a girl pregnant, and you go, yeah, great, okay, that is a lesson teenage boys should be taught. But then they don't tell you, oh, it's actually, it can be quite complicated.
They don't tell you any of that.
Yeah, no, no. Like, do you know what an ovulation test is? And you have to put menstrual cycles into apps and things. And it's all this stuff. Yeah. Guys just don't know, because we don't ask. But one of the things for me, like particularly the first time when the whole thing happened, I was very, very fortunate that... Steve McNeil, who is a very good friend of mine and a comedian, we were sharing a camper van at a comedy festival just before it happened last time.
Yeah, I know Steve, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, from McNeil and Pamphilon and Go 8-Bit.
Yes.
So Steve and his wife, they've got an absolutely gorgeous, healthy, brilliant daughter, but they have... they've suffered a lot of miscarriages, and I'm not telling tales at school here, because Steve has done a lot of work for the Miscarriage Association. So when they did Dara Breen's Go 8-Bit, Steve got all of the people who were on the TV show to sign this incredible like gaming computer and auctioned it off for the Miscarriage Association, and he's done a lot of work for them. So I was sharing a camper van with him at this comedy festival, and he was talking to him. He and his wife were trying again, and he said, "Are you trying?" And I said, "Well, we're tentatively at whatever we were at the time, however many weeks. And he said, well, I wish you a tentative congratulations. But because he had been so kind of publicly open about discussing those things, he was somebody who I knew I could talk to when it happened. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that somebody who had been through the thing. And yeah. I wouldn't have known that if he hadn't been just so open about
so vocal about those things.
So it was really it was really great to know that there was somebody there who I knew and I was mates with that I could talk to, because I have to say it's not something that guys talk about.
No, not ever.
Yeah, and I think
you don't think to ask either. You kind of know about getting or trying to have a baby. Yeah, yeah, the complication. No, I don't think I've ever really talked about it. Thinking about it now.
No. So that thing about. And I'd mentioned this in the show, and I was actually talking about it on stage last night. There are pregnancy books aimed at men, and they are absolutely awful. right, apologies. Look, somebody must like them because they're making them. But I got one and had a read of it, and it's just absolutely unbearable. They're all written like 90s copies of FHM. They've got this really incongruous, like, lad banter thing. Because there's this horrible thing that men have to deal with where there's this assumption that any serious topic needs to be put to us in banal terms. Like, everything has to be explained as football and pub. Like, don't worry if it's a bit emotional. We can break it down to football and pub. And that's everything from, like, I remember, like, me and my mate were looking for a flat years ago, and the estate agent was just talking to us like that because we were lads, you know. And he kept talking about the budget of the flat. And he was like, if you think about it, it's only a couple of pints of lager, isn't it? And
I hate that so much.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, you know, you could put a telly on the wall for football. And it's just like, could you just start off? And there is that. So these books, I just thought it was ridiculous because they're all written in this sort of stupid, faux laddie term as if we're not capable of dealing with, like, big concepts. And
I know.
So I had one on my Kindle and I brought it up the other day and just had a flip through, and I was reading bits of it out to Sarah, and she's going, Jesus Christ. And there's that thing of going, there is Sarah's got a load of books on pregnancy. So I just read one of those, you know, one of the ones aimed at women.
Yeah,
I just changed words.
Did you understand it?
I did, yeah. I changed all the words like you just to her, and it was fine. And it just seemed like so stupid that something that's incredibly complicated can be very dangerous and whatnot. It's happening to a woman's body. So there's books for women where it's explained in mature adult ways about what's going on and all that sort of stuff. And then for the guys who, let's face it, I mean, we're very much in a supporting role during the pregnancy thing.
Yeah. When people say we are pregnant, like, mate, I know what you're saying. But you're not. And you're fine. Go on.
It's very important that we share this. Like, yeah, I mean, it is, but you also have to make sure while sharing it, you're not looking to take a bow here.
Imagine that. After all that, the baby is in her arms and you take a bow. Thank you. Yes, it's been very tough. We're here now. Thank you for your support. You go, get fucked, sit down.
Get hold of
it. Maybe that's it, mate. You need to write a book.
I'm absolutely not going to write a book on pregnancy. it would just be good if one was written sensibly, as if men, they're perpetuating this notion that men are sort of oafish, thick idiots who will get squeamish at the mention of any emotions or
tampons. Buy your own tampons. I'm not getting him. It's gay to get them.
Yeah, all of that sort of stuff. And you go, it's not. There's a lot of that about, and it was really interesting to see it in books aimed at expectant fathers, because you're like, I don't know, like if you're weirded out by the word cervix, I don't know if you've got the toolkit ready to raise a human being. I don't.
Mate, you wait till Father's Day rolls around and they're going to buy you a card shaped like a pint glass.
Yes.
That's what I see in all the shots. Well, actually, my sons are really good. They understand me and they don't get that sort of thing, but I see it all the time.
They get you little black and white pictures of Liam Gallagher.
That's what I want. It means I've been a good parent if they understand you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's exactly. It's an interesting thing in terms of dad. I have to be communicated to, like we're going to flip out about things. I'm sure there's plenty of things I am going to flip out about, but I don't.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
What you're going to have to avoid is trying not to be your own parents. Like, no disrespect to your parents or my parents.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, they didn't get everything right, and as you get into it, you'll be doing something. Go, this doesn't. Oh shit, no, this isn't. Oh, this is wrong. I shouldn't be doing this. But because you've been led by your parents, you know what I mean? You kind of, you're like Bill Burr said, you're kind of filtering stuff out, you know?
Yeah.
You go, oh, that was good. That was bad.
My sister, when she had her first kid, my dad had to intervene at a certain point because she'd be flipping out, not sure what to do. And she'd call my mum up and say, what do you do here? And my mum would say, you do this, this, and this. And then my sister would go on the internet and apparently between 1980 and 2017, there had been some further thoughts, right? So everything that my mum had told my sister was now wrong, sort of by the book. Mm. And so she would ring my mum up and correct everything that my mum had told her. And my dad had to sort of ring her up and go, can you stop doing that?
Yeah, just keep it to yourself. Yeah, let her have her ways, and then you just ignore it and go and do it your way. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't.
Oh, matter. You're in for a fucking treat, mate. And I wish you all the best with it. When is it? Do you know when it's due?
Yeah, it's due in February. So we've got time to go through the second lockdown.
And
for most of the venues in the country to close. And
brilliant.
I've got to go and find, probably have to find another job. So I'm thinking teacher, despite everything that I've said about them. It's the only option.
You'd actually, funnily enough, make a brilliant teacher. No fuss. And you'd be one of those ones that if the kid had gained your trust and actually you liked that kid, it would be monumental, you know, because there'd be loads of kids that think, oh, he's just an angry, angry monster. But there'd be a couple of kids going, oh, I think he's the best teacher I've ever met. Like, definitely have to earn your love.
I guess so. Although we might be all right. Comedy might come back because, as you were saying earlier, it's really the most important thing. And
it's the most important thing. We above are all things.
We are the most important people. You can tell that by a lot of the output of comedians worldwide during the lockdown. That it's been very important. It's been very important to stress how important it is.
Yes,
everybody knows it's important. It's not been funny, granted, but
have you ever tried to make a laptop laugh?
I did once. Have you done any Zoom gigs? Like, no, I would be very suspicious about anybody who would watch one. We've got 85 years of recorded entertainment to get through. No one needs to see me fumble around my notes and my. Also, I thought it was very. Particularly early in lockdown, we were all going out, comedians, musicians and everything, and doing 4K streaming gigs left, right and centre, absolutely eating up the bandwidth around the place for any key workers that were trying to watch pornography on their break.
And then we were clapping at night when they were trying to get some kip.
Yeah, absolutely. what a night, what an absolute nightmare bunch of people we are.
Listen, I'm gonna have to go. I've got to go to Blenheim Palace. So this has been lovely.
Car park gig, is it?
It's outdoors. Yeah, it's in. I think it's in the garden, so it should be fine.
I'm gonna plug the so the show that we were talking about.
Go on.
It's an album now, and it's, so I don't feel particularly grubby about doing this because you can get it on Spotify and wherever your streaming service is, you can get it, and not, you don't have to pay for it, and I don't really get any money for it, but I'd like you to hear it because I'm very proud of it, and I'm very proud of it, and it's obviously, if you've been mildly interested by this conversation, you might like it. So it's on GarrettMillerick.com. There's a link there, but yeah, if you just search my name on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever your streaming thing is, you can find it. The album's called Sunflower.
Lovely. We won't bother with Twitter.
No, there's absolutely no point. I mean, you can follow me on Instagram, but like, look, my wife's pregnant. I've got a lot of DIY to do and things. If you tweet me or message me or something, I probably, you know, I'm not going to reply.
And we'll carry this on next Thursday when I see you for beer.
Yes, indeed. I shall make sure my uric acid levels and my blood are very low, so our beer session doesn't result in me being disabled for a few days.
I'll bring a chair, don't worry.
All right, buddy.
Lovely. Cheers, Garrett. This has been amazing.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, man.
Produced by Paul Daniels at pauldaniels.tv.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.